Welcome back to the Love in Dubai Show podcast. We had a big show. We had interviews about horror, about music, and also the big news that the Indian Prime Minister Modi is in town for many reasons.
And so if you have missed the episode, don't forget to subscribe to the Love in Dubai Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Enjoy the show.
Dubai, welcome back to the Love in Dubai show, where we go through the top trending stories that everyone across the country is talking about. A big visit to the UAE yesterday, and our top story today, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi inaugurated a remarkable Hindu temple in Abu Dhabi.
As well, RTA and Etihad Rail partnership, as you can use your new card as soon as it's available.
We're talking about a large amount of crystal meth and hashish found in someone's boot.
As well, the first ever cutest proposal on DXB Airport rooftop.
And we're super excited. Later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Naila Al-Khaja, the first ever Emirati director of a movie. And her horrifying movie is out now in cinemas across the GCC and MENA region.
As well, Blue Pfeiffer shares how she found her unique sound in Lebanon. So we're so excited for that.
But before we get there, yesterday was Valentine's Day, and while some of you went out for dinner, did nice things, we know we have a lot of lonely hearts in the city. I think it's because it's a young city.
Yeah.
That's why. So loads of people didn't do anything, and for that reason, we want to gift you
Valentine's from us to you. So you guys, we have
the glam
surprise for you. This beautiful pink bag. I think whoever is like on the live, we have a lot of people from the office who would want these things, who spent Valentine's Day alone. And a lot of like goodies, guys, like makeup. Look at this. This is an amazing
lip
dry shampoo.
Stuff. Who it's doesn't amazing. Need an extra mascara? It's from Glam Butte. It's the Glam Butte box. There's like bath salts
beautiful.
In here, makeup accessories. But to get it, this reminds me of, have you seen Notting Hill?
Yeah.
So you know when they're at that dinner table and to get the last cookie, to get the last brownie, they're like, you have to tell the saddest story. So to get your hands on this bad boy.
We've asked you actually, guys, what is your saddest Valentine's story? Of course, guys, Valentine's, you can even just love yourself.
Love yourself. And this is what this is about, because it says, the glam be true to you. So be true
love
to you,
yourself.
But tell us your saddest story. The saddest story gets to win.
And, you know, we did a poll on Instagram, and a lot of people did share their saddest Valentine's story, and we will be giving this away. So a lot of people said, oh, they didn't have a date, which is very...
It's okay.
It's okay. You guys need to have a date with yourself, right?
Yeah, that's not that sad. Not having a date isn't going to get you this box.
Exactly.
That's very normal to not have a date. It's okay to not have a date. We're with you on that one.
It's fine. Yeah, you
probably... We need sadder.
Yeah, we need, like, sad. Yeah. So someone was saying, being alone in Dubai, especially when you see romantic couples around you. I mean, it's okay. You're in Dubai, right?
But true. But I kind of, it's like, I get it when you see, it's the reminder. So like, it's totally okay. You don't have a date, fine. But when you see other people getting flowers, you know, when you see other people going out on dates, and even if you don't want to go on one, you're like, I get that.
That's sad. Yeah, no, that's I do get that, you know, because like, of course, you guys, you know, but as we said yesterday, you can just like love yourself. You know, we had, by the way, a full list, you know, like Rove Hotels just had like this amazing package that you can, you know, go book a room for yourself. You were going to get a teddy bear, box of chocolate, which was beautiful. You could have done that.
You don't need nobody.
Yeah, we don't need anyone. You can just like love yourself. And once you love yourself, people will love you.
Okay, let's see. So keep your comments coming through on Instagram if you want to get this box. Someone said, when my husband realized on the 15th that the 14th was Valentine's Day, that's 13 years of marriage for you. you need to remind your partner. If you've been with them for 13 years and they're likely to forget these things, you need to access their Google Calendar and put like reminders. If that's what you want, that's what you need to be doing.
You know, I've actually heard that after marriage, everything changes. And that is why, like, it causes me a lot of, like, I'd say, resentment towards marriage, because I hear that from everyone.
No, I don't, actually. I hear, as in, like, I don't think everything changes after marriage.
I mean, once the guy and the girl, they stop dating, after marriage, I feel like that's kind of, like, where the spark ends. But, you know, you guys, you can, as Casey has mentioned, you need to sometimes maybe remind your partner, because, like, life comes in the way, and
yeah, get in those Google calendars. I lost my job, and my husband didn't even take me out or give me a rose when he does every other year. Aww.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry this happened to you. But it's okay. You can love yourself.
I feel like that's kind of a winner there.
Yeah.
We won't read out your name, but if you said that to us, we have your details, and we'll get this box to you, because that kind of sucks. And he should have pulled all the stops out if you lost your job. So this is going to you.
You can say, by the way, your Valentine's was up in Dubai, so it's a win-win situation.
You celebrated with us. Yes. What a treat for you.
Yes.
Okay, before we get into our top stories, a small reminder, it is day 132 since the genocide began in Gaza, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health in the Gaza Strip. The death toll has risen to 28,576, while 68,291 have been injured, and more than 1.9 million people have been displaced from their homes. Our thoughts and prayers are always with the people in Gaza through this horrific time.
All right, so now let's start with our first story. Indian Prime Minister Modi inaugurated a remarkable Hindu temple in Abu Dhabi, and the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is currently on a visit to the UAE, and he is hard at work dropping in to speak at the World Government Summit before heading down to Abu Dhabi to inaugurate the Babs Hindu Mandir. Of course, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President and Prime Minister and ruler of Dubai, was in attendance at the main address delivered by Narendra Modi, a guest of honor at the World Government Summit 2024, who expressed his gratitude to President His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, whom he met with several times. Prime Minister Modi called him not only a leader of vision, but a leader of resolve and a leader of commitment as well.
So a lot of stories coming out just in one day. However, the highlight of the trip was a historic one, the incredible images you can see behind us. The Prime Minister came to the UAE to inaugurate the UAE's first Hindu temple. The Mandir is architecturally stunning. It stands at a height of 108 feet and sits on 27 acres. It's now open to all, and you'll find it near Al Rabah off the Dubai Abu Dhabi Sheikh Zayed Highway.
As well, his visit was well documented, and he also shared images of the amazing Hindu temple, which was beautiful. We can assure you that, by the way.
Lots of stories coming through of that inauguration. You can see them online and see the videos of the incredible welcome. Also interesting, Modi shared images of his on his Twitter of a beautiful copy of the book His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President and Prime Minister of the UAE and ruler of Dubai, wrote. And he wrote him a handwritten message at the beginning. And it said, generations to come will be inspired by his life and outstanding work, his dedication to Dubai's growth. So there's obviously a strong partnership between the UAE and India, and that was clearly solidified through talks in front of the public and also behind closed doors as well.
As well, by the way, and it's amazing because it just shows that it's a symbol of the shared heritage between the UAE and as well India, you know, like having like all of these temples, you know, it just... It not only shares the shared heritage, but as well shares a lot of, I would say, acceptance and tolerance of all religions and all cultures at this point.
True.
Yes. So now let's jump to our next story. The RTA and Etihad Rail partnerships is you can now use, of course, as soon as it's open, your NOL cards for that. So a document has been signed earlier at the World Government Summit in Dubai, indicating a partnership between RTA and Etihad Rail aiming to simplify the ticket booking process, and the NOL card might come in handy.
This is amazing. And also we've talked about the RTA improving the NOL card, so it'll eventually be on your phone, making everything so easy. His Highness Sheikh Maktoum bin Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, first Deputy Ruler of Dubai and Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Finance of the UAE, alongside His Highness Sheikh Tayyib bin Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, Chairman of Etihad Rail, witnessed the important signing ceremony. This collaboration seeks to develop Etihad Rail's initiatives in enhancing passenger trains to meet the required standards, basically guaranteeing you a secure, dependable, and comfortable travel environment across the country's new and improved railway network.
Now, of course, as we mentioned, it does not only stop there, as the RTA plans to upgrade its current node system by switching from plastic cards to a more advanced digital payment system. His Highness mentioned this agreement will bring together federal and local agencies, enabling ticket reservations and payments for Etihad Rail passengers nationwide. Now, it's a big step for in connecting RTA's transportation services with Etihad Rail, which will greatly improve mass transportation in the UAE.
I don't think I've ever been so excited for a train.
Same.
You know what I mean?
Same. It's like, hi mom, hi dad, I'm just gonna go to Qatar. That would be very cool, because like it's supposed to, you know, connect all of the Gulf countries. So I'm just like excited for that, and using the NOL card for it, it's exciting at this point.
It's such a handy transportation system. Obviously, it'll be cheaper than flying, probably. And you can leave your car behind, and it will just kind of like makes a weekend out of it. I would always get the train growing up, like from different counties around Ireland. So I cannot wait for this to be just part of the infrastructure of the UAE. It will make transport to all the other Emirates a lot more viable for so many people, which is amazing.
That is true.
Speaking of transport we don't approve of, our next story, a large amount of meth and hashish was found hidden in someone's boot. Dubai Customs thwarted another major drug smuggling operation, this time from the trunk of someone's car. A smuggler was carrying around 3 grams of crystal meth and 6.5 kg of hashish, which was found following a skillful operation on via Dubai's land border protection.
Now, the person was driving over the border and appeared to be behaving suspiciously, which, by the way, alerted the border police to carry out a further inspection and following a quick investigation. Now, the large amount of drugs were found hidden in seats in the car, and the man was arrested and now faces prosecution. At this point, it just amazes me, because, like, at this, you guys are in UAE, and the UAE just never fails to, I would say, catch people who smuggle drugs in a way. No matter how you think you're sleek and how you think that you are not going to be caught, but you will be caught. People just, like, for some reason, just, like, miss it at this point.
But I think the difference is, if you're caught here, that's the end of your life here.
That is true.
You know, and I think that's the reason we don't see drugs on the streets here. It's not a thing. There is a zero drugs policy across the country. But also it's the severe punishment. So if you value the UAE, and like so many of us constantly say how lucky we are to live here, how blessed we are, breaking the law is not an option. If you break it to the scale of drugs, you will be fined, you will be deported, and you won't get back into the country. And that I think many of people, That is such a strict line, and the no tolerance is so strict that we don't see as many stories coming through. However, border security is always on the patrol. We've seen a number of kind of questionable smuggling operations over the last couple of months. Dubai Customs are always quick to point out the very effective technologies they use to make sure that this doesn't happen. And this is just one more of those stories.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is what makes UAE one of the safest countries, right? And just people, they just catch anyone and everyone who it in any way try to sabotage that, and it just like amazes me every time. They never fail to amaze me.
Don't mess with the fabric of UAE society. You will be caught.
Yes, you will be.
Let's jump on to a cute story.
Yes, of course, since it was Valentine's. Now, this is the first ever proposal on DXB Airport rooftop. Yes, you guys heard it right. DXB Airport rooftop. That's very creative. Now, yesterday, it was Valentine's Day, and as many couples for sure have spent some quality time together, it was filled with love, and some others got proposed to. As this DXB couple got engaged on the roof of Dubai Airport, as a magical proposal just took place on the roof.
So cute. So this is the couple, and a little bit of backstory on the couple. They came to Dubai a while ago as a tourist, that's Anastasia, and met Dimitri at a restaurant where they fell in love. She intentionally missed her flight back to Russia so she could stay with Dimitri.
That's so cute. And on Valentine's Day, Dimitri proposed to Anastasia with an iconic backdrop. Now the couple now have the world's first ever proposal on an airport rooftop. That's so, effort. Talk about effort.
Talk about effort.
Yes.
I just love her surprise. You know, she clearly had no idea. I'd love he obviously had to come up with an elaborate plan to get her there. I wonder what that was. Maybe she thought she was taking a trip And then, but could you, because to get to the airport rooftop, like that's, no one's going there, right? Like that's 100%. A very once in a lifetime thing. So I wonder what he had to say to get her there, you know, because either he panicked her, you know, like we're at the airport, we have to get to the roof. Or he was like, I want to show you something, but that would have made her twig. So I think he would have had to shock and scare her.
I actually agree with you. I don't think clearly she looks like in, with her outfit, she looks like she was ready to go on a trip. She's wearing like leggings.
Travel ready.
She is like ready to travel. So he probably like, I don't know, told her like, oh, we're missing the we are missing the flight and they are waiting for us and all of these things. Because it's like beautiful at this point. This is like actual effort. And their love story, they met here, and she's from Russia, and she stayed intentionally. I mean, she did put as well some effort to last with him. You know, like, she didn't just, like, go back to Russia, which is, like, good effort.
But how did he get her on the roof is the question that we need answered.
He probably lied to her. He probably was like, oh, the airplane, I don't know. And as a girl, you know, maybe, like, at the moment, she panicked for too long that she just like went with him because, you know, like, I don't know, that's what I would do if I'm panicking. And
that's what I say, he panicked, you know? Her. Dimitri?
Yeah. He did panic her. Let us know.
We know you had some in with DXB, so shout out DXB for making this happen. A world first, if you will. Speaking of another first, we are very excited to join our next guest. She's the UAE's first Emirati film director. Naila Al-Khaja will be with us after this very short break. Hey guys, welcome back to the Love and Dubai show. Today's guest is Naila Al-Khaja. She is the first female director in the UAE, renowned for her captivating work in both movies and commercials. Her latest movie has just dropped in cinemas across the GCC and MENA region. She's here to tell us why it will freak you out. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Yay, thank you for having me.
We're delighted to have you on.
Yes, we are. We actually are. And I have a lot of questions because, like, usually, you know, like with horror films, we do see that it's often a male who wrote it. So if you can tell us more about your movie and just like the details.
Thank you for asking that, because most people are under the impression that women only do films about a woman and, you know, rom-coms or just like traditional dramas. But I'm all about the genre. Very intense, crazy, psychotic genre. And you know, how many times have you heard this expression? Oh my God, she's batshit crazy. Excuse my language. But that means we can create those stories that are from that category, I think, right?
Yeah, it is, which is amazing.
I'm coming across as really mad.
No, it's not at all. You're fine. Like,
I haven't seen the whole movie. I will. The trailer is intense. It's horrifying. And it seems, I don't think, have been produced in this region before. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
So what goes into making this type of movie?
So basically, just to put it in context, it's a cross-cultural psychological drama / some people call it horror, because it's the horror of the mother and the intensity of the events that fold in her life while she watches her son go through this turbulence of, you know, mental health or mental breakdown, let me say, where it's been interpreted as he's, you know, obviously gone through what a lot of cultures believe in, the superstition and, you know, evil eye. I'm not sure if your cultures have that, but do you do? Yeah. So it's probably everywhere, right? Yeah. Versus logic, science, and medicine. And healing through traditional senses. So it's like two worlds battling each other. And some people are saying, no, he's, you know, obviously possessed. And the other one are like, no, he's obviously going through a slight case of schizophrenia. But one thing I have to tell you, girls, the boy is going to freak you out.
He did in the short clip that I saw, he did. Like, I'm thinking about it right now. You know, his little, like, kiss to the nurse. He's like, and then he goes, oh, sorry, that's it.
But the beauty is that I'm very, very proud of the cast that we found for the film 3. Please go watch it in the cinema. Please watch it. And it is incredible to see first time. Yeah, I mean, this gives hope to a lot of people. First time actors from the UAE who are like now on a big silver screen in 7 countries and over 100 cinemas. That's a massive achievement to everyone who's worked on this film. But moreover, to have, let's say, Jefferson Hall from Oppenheimer, Halloween, a lot of big films. He has a massive portfolio working alongside Emirati actors and also non-Emirati actors. You know, he actually in one of the scenes, he pulled me on the side and he said, where did you find this kid? he's killing me. He's killing me in the good sense, like, you know, like he's literally like pushing the envelope here. And honestly, my hat goes, like, you know, we say that expression comes down for all the wonderful performances that we have seen in the film.
Amazing.
So you've mentioned that you talk about in the movie about, like, you know, like some people think it's evil eye, some people think it's he's possessed, yes. and so on. And of course, it's in my culture, and of course, in everyone, in your culture, and in your culture as well, in everyone's culture, right? So, of course, what is one message that you had when creating the movie?
So my message is, don't rush mm-hmm. when you have someone that's really ill in your family, because it's not to be taken very lightly. And please don't listen to a lot of different, as the boy would say it actually, voices of others trying to kind of sway you from the route that you have taken. So definitely take the medical route first, because I know it's really taboo for a lot of people to say that they have a mentally challenged person at home, which, you know, mental illness comes in many different layers and many different degrees, and there are a lot of different diagnoses. So they shouldn't give up and really go under the skin of that, because if they immediately take the religious route, which I understand and I respect, a lot of people believe and they want to do that, but what can that can actually exasperate, and that can actually make the situation worse for a lot of children. And this is based on a true story where, you know, they didn't exhaust the medical pathway first. And if you speak to a lot of Muslim religious scholars, they will tell you the same thing, that 98% to 99%, that's a huge percent, that's almost every other case of these cases, are medical cases. They're not, you know, some kind of jinn who enters your body. It's not that easy. But it's amazing how people immediately jump to that conclusion and sometimes subject children, like literally go through a very aggressive, intensive episodes where they might come out of it even more harmed and more, like, might look even more deranged because of the pathway that you chose. So please exhaust the medical pathway first before you jump into other
sources.
Yes.
It's interesting because it's a horror, it's a psychological drama, but yeah. Of course, do you intentionally mean to highlight potentially harmful issues in society
through
your work?
This is, you guys are asking me all the best questions. I have to say, love in Dubai, I'm loving it. Like all the good ones, the juicy ones. Yes, because these are important questions, correct. So my idea, like most of my films highlight societal issues, especially like taboo topics, but in a package of entertainment so that the masses can watch it, the masses debate them, and they all have an open ending. So when you walk out, you'll start debating, you know, was he this, was he that? And it just opens room for dialogue. So even my other films have the same kind of like, it lends the same kind of plate to you. So it has these nuances, and it really encourages conversations and debates, which is very healthy. Mm-hmm. Because usually we don't talk about these things. So when you bring out this topic, it's amazing how many people have DM'd me in private saying, oh my God, you know, my cousin's going through this, or my sister's going. And I don't take this lightly, because it's happened, you know, it's happened in front of me, it's happened in front of a lot of people. And we just have to accept it. The body gets sick, the mind also gets sick. And we need to find the right pathway to treat these individual, whether they're adults or children. But of course, I package it in an entertaining way, because in the end of the day, it's a movie. And I want like a mass audience to watch it, but without disrespecting the topic. So I was extremely careful on how it was handled from A to Z.
So, you know, like, sorry. So you know how like you'd mentioned that, you know, you do tackle some taboo topics,
yes.
right? And of course, you are one of the few first women to direct a movie. And in the Arab culture, technically, if you talk about taboo topics, you are, oh, you're not allowed to. It's called like either aib, which is like not allowed.
Or haram.
Or haram, which is like forbidden. And did you have like any, I would say, people that stood in your way like, oh, don't talk about it. Don't mention it. Because people will think like, oh, you've gone through it or something like that. Because we hear that a lot.
Not to me personally. Like mm-hmm. I didn't experience that myself. But what I experienced the opposite, like when you do put it in a movie, in a story, people tend to open up more. They feel like, oh, she spoke, then I can talk. And it becomes more a collective energy as opposed to one person outing themselves. And I think that's what really supports the idea of speaking about these topics, for sure. Yeah.
Can we rewind a little bit yeah. to just learn a little bit more about you and how you entered the, let's say, male-dominated movie scene? What was that journey like for you?
Well, to begin with, I want to do a little drum roll because... thank you. I found out yesterday that the film is has also opened its doors in Alexandria, Cairo, and it's the first female directed film ever to be in Egypt.
Amazing.
And a lot of thank you so much. Yeah. And first time ever to be in Saudi, so KSA, gracing their cinemas as well. So for me, that's a massive milestone where now we are in 7 countries and hopefully very soon in Asia. So we are really trying to push this because, again, I really stress this. This film is not just for Emiratis. It's for expats. It's a cross-culture, like 60% of it is in English, so people do find it easy to follow the Arabic parts because it's subtitled. And obviously having Jefferson Hall gives it that kind of international flair where it's really for everyone. It's not just for locals. I started, as you asked me before, this wasn't, it's not for the faint of heart for sure. It needs a lot of patience to be in this field. It's super extremely hard to break the glass ceiling, but I'm so glad I did start a long time ago. So for those who give up after 2 years, remember it took me 22 years. I know that people like would throw terminologies like, oh, she's pioneering. And this was like 10 years ago and 20 years ago. You know, there's never a time where I thought I've reached. There's always think I just, you know, I'm just starting. So with every project, I'm just starting. And this is, for me, again, the beginning. And it's funny how many times I've said that over 2 decades. Wow. So it just gives you the, I wouldn't say the illusion, but it gives you the motivation to go on and go stronger each time. And I'm also super excited to say that I have 2 shorts on Netflix, which is also another big milestone. Uh-huh. So if you do like the bizarre and the horrors, so yeah.
It must be it's there. It's actually very exciting. Yeah. Actually, it's very exciting. But let's step away from your movie. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm sure it's 100%. I'm sure that it's filled with messages and it's amazing. But you have as well directed TV commercials.
Yes.
Like Nike, Mercedes.
That's a very good, my God, guys, you are killing me with a good question. So basically, this is a lot of good research. But for sure, so this is how I was able to sustain myself as an artist, as someone who I paint, you know, I love painting. So that's my background. So I do all on canvas. And a lot of people don't know this. I used to have a gallery. I sold paintings. But this is my beginning of my career. And that was kind of parallel with filmmaking. But I'm like, okay, I need to earn a living. And this was the best way to learn, to be constantly on set and to shoot commercials. So directing for those big brands, I'm so grateful for them. And I don't know if I'll ever do it again because I stopped and I'm just doing narrative work now. But that taught me the fiscal side of the business. It taught me a lot about marketing. It taught me a lot, like a holistic approach to just creating stories by having, because sometimes you can have a commercial where you're shooting only 3 days and it's the same budget of a feature film. Obviously, they have massive budgets, right? Yeah. So the pressure is intense. The clients are really brutal. You know, I've had some really, really incredible, I have survived this set kind of t-shirts after doing them. But very good, hardcore lessons of life, which I was able to shift my work ethic into, the long format. And that's why when I do work with different, like now I have, oh yes, breaking news. I finally got signed up by a management company in the UK.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Good job.
Zero Gravity, big shout out to them.
Nice.
So now they are like literally bringing scripts to me to consider, that I get to pitch for directing. So that's super cool.
It's amazing. And you mentioned long format. And obviously, in the last number of years, we've seen bigger budget long format movies coming to the UAE, Dune, Mission Impossible, and things like that. That's coming from Hollywood.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on the Hollywood movies choosing to come here? And how do you think that will impact the movie scene in the UAE?
So basically, grassroots cinema is extremely important. And this is where we desperately lack an infrastructure. And you can tell that cinema is not a priority yet. Hopefully, it will come. Now, servicing Bollywood, Hollywood, etc. is good because it brings, you know, it kind of gets all the crew members working, it pumps the money in the economy and whatnot. But I really feel like if ground root cinema was created in a way where it becomes robust, where we are creating the content now and we are, like, you know, exporting that elsewhere, literally what you're doing is you're creating ambassadors through storytelling for the UAE, and not just for locals but expats alongside. And this is where you really see the arts and culture coming through, the power of storytelling, is when we have our own cinema and celebrating our own kind of work. And this was not an easy ordeal. If it wasn't for three people, actually it's a pun, but you know, the film is called Three, but those three people actually believed in me, the first one to believe in me in the sense that it's a woman, so yay. So big shout out to Muna Al-Gurk, who pretty, you know, she put the first dollar in to develop the script for Three. And then Sultan Al-Dermaki also supported all of my films, from The Shadow of Three to the next one, Bob. And then Siddharth Tucker, who had nothing to do with filmmaking. He is into the perfumery business, but is so in love with storytelling, is trying out. This is his first film with me as well, and he might make more movies. So if you're listening to this, you know someone who's extremely talented, who really needs a break into storytelling, maybe you will be the person that will give them their first break, and hence their wings will start, you know, like soaring in the sky, and we'll get to see some amazing voices from the region and not just, you know, the same old cliche of Hollywood and Bollywood, which I'm not saying is bad. There's some really good stuff coming out of there. But let's be honest, we need those. We need fresh voices from the Middle East, and specifically from the UAE, don't you think?
Of course, 100%. Yeah. I mean, at this point when, you know, like the movie came out and an Emirati, like let alone a woman, but an Emirati woman has directed it, it just like created a whole, I would say, buzz in the Emirati world, specifically because, you know, we hear like names like the Lebanese name, yes, Nadine Lebaki, yeah, and so on. But, you know, like having an Emirati woman direct a horror movie. Did you like, I would say, did you have like a vision? What was the process? How did you have like a vision of like, I want this scene to look like this and this scene to look like that? So did you have a vision?
I have a clear, like a very clear way of directing, in the sense that each film has a sketch. So when I have, for instance, with this film, to me, it was a funnel. So we start with very, you know, an open lens, lots of light coming in, and then it gets darker and darker, and it literally looks like a funnel. So I sketch my films first. So for example, with my next film, Bob, everything is a reflection. So it's a parallel world where it folds. So everything folds within itself. The mountain, it's about a twin sister, the twins fold. The house is exactly symmetrical, so it literally folds. So everything is sketched where it just starts like, you know, flipping. Even the word B-A-A-B can flip on itself. So everything, I guess, that could be, if you want to call it, the vision of the film. So yes, there is, in my mind, a structure where I take that initial sketch and then build on that. That becomes my foundation for each film. So I start with sketching the films first,
it
if
is
that makes
so
any sense.
It is so interesting to hear the grassroots of these stories. It really is. We are running out of time. Very shortly, I agree, there's a lot of storytelling to be done in the region. People who are trying to break the glass ceiling, anyone out there, do you have one piece of advice that you wish you had at the beginning of your journey?
Yes. Don't listen to anyone. Volunteer on set if you want to get into storytelling. Really, it takes time. Some people got their first break in 25 years. It's really, it will test you to the end of your core. But if you're really meant for this, you will find your way. And guess what? Today we've entered the third week of the film. And it's people like you that keeps it like literally running in the cinema. So if you haven't seen Three, please go out there and support, and you know, support local artwork. And please be wowed by the performances of my actors. I'm just so proud of them.
Amazing. I actually have goosebumps for you. Three is now available across the GCC and MENA region, 7 countries and more to come. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Love in Dubai, for asking the best question today.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Masa and Hesham, for helping that as well. Guys, it's 9:07, but our show does not end here. We sat down with the UAE's next regional artist spotlight. Her name is Blue Fifa. She's from Lebanon, and she had us here. We had her here not too long ago. The interview's here. Take a listen. Hey guys, welcome back to the Love in Dubai show. Today we're thrilled to have a guest who embodies the spirit of Athara's regional artist spotlight, the talented one and only Blue Pfeiffer. RAS launched back in 2021. It's committed to showcasing and celebrating the exceptional talents of the Middle East region. She is a Lebanese songwriter, producer, and director. We're so excited to have her on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
We appreciate
thank
your time.
For being here. So actually, we've noticed that you recently turned 31.
Happy late birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday.
Wow. We're sorry we're late. We know that we're late,
thank
but
so
happy
much.
Birthday. So,
thank
of
you.
Course, I'm in my mid-20s.
So, oh. Yeah.
Do I'm in the 30 club.
Or do I look
no.
younger?
No. It's just, you know, the 20s are, now that I've yeah. entered my 30s, I see my good. 20s in retrospect, and yeah. it's very different.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but I'm actually very proud to be, not proud, I'm happy with yeah. being 31. I always thought that when I went into my 30s, it would be like, you know, especially like, as a woman, it would yeah. be like, oh no. But actually, yeah. this is the best time of my life.
No, I yeah. completely understand you.
Yeah.
But how does it feel like? I mean, what advice would you give girls and guys like me?
In their
20s? Yeah.
It gets better.
It gets, really?
It gets better.
I don't
yeah.
know.
I feel like the 20s, or at least for me, yeah. and for my friends, because we have this conversation a lot, especially like going into the 30s. About how the 20s are very chaotic and you're not really very, you don't know yourself that much.
Okay.
So a lot, you know, there's a lot of
things to explore.
Yeah, figuring out yourself and figuring out like who you are in the world and who you want to be in the relationships around you. And your late 30s, we all start going to therapy and figuring stuff out. And then when we're in 30s, okay, now I know who I am. Now yeah. I operate from that place. I make decisions based on who I really am. I don't abandon myself as much anymore. 20s are fun, but just a bit too chaotic.
It's so true. I completely right? agree. As someone in their mid-30s, I stand by that. So if you're 20s and you're watching,
it gets
like
better.
It gets better.
hopefully.
Okay. We want to learn a little bit about you. You've come to Dubai a couple of times. You've had some gigs here, but tell yeah. people, who is Blue Pfeiffer? First of all, where does the name come from?
Where does it come from? Mm-hmm. So it's not my birth name. But it came with the creation who I wanted to be. It just kind of felt more aligned with who I am and my art and how I presented myself, and the name just kind of came. So yeah, but that's, I mean, everyone calls me Blue, my friends, my family, it's who I am, Blue.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's actually very nice, because like as well, you were just talking about, you know, like creativity and art and so on. So how would you say, or how would you describe, you know, like your, I would say, road towards your creative music and
like
creating.
The process?
Yes.
Yeah, so the way that I approach my art is very much, like I say, multifaceted, because I like to use, so I do different things. I'm an artist, I write music, I songwrite, I produce for myself, for other artists, I direct, I edit, I have my record label, and I feel like all those different things are mediums to tell the same story. So it's the same process for me, it's the same decision making along the way, whether I'm producing a song or thinking about the edit of a music video. It's I'm operating from the same intention of, this is the story I want to say, this is the mood, this is the colors, this is the feeling that I want to inspire, and it's really important for me to be in charge of all those things, just because of my journey. When I was young, I never thought I'd be doing all those yeah. different things. I just thought in the beginning, oh, I want to sing. And the more I got to know the industry and the more I explored myself through the arts and through working with different people, I really got to understand that I like to do all these different things. Even working with other artists, like producing for other artists, like brings me the same joy as when I'm making music for myself. Just like, yeah, creating a world around something, whether it's music or film. I'm really passionate about that.
It's so interesting. At what point did you realize, so you said you were drawn to music from a young age, but at what point did you realize that art could be used as a form of storytelling? And when did you start combining the two?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the beginning I was attracted to, I used to see what singers do, and I used to be attracted to how they could express themselves in that way and how they could relate to the audience, and I found that interesting. And the more I got to understand the behind the scenes of how something is made, how an artist is developed, how a song is brought to life, it's not just about sitting and writing, there's so much that goes into it, I really got attracted to the art form of those things, and it became
much more interesting to me than just the singing part itself. I don't even really consider myself a singer. All my friends know it's but I mean, I know this is the perception of me because that's what people receive on the surface end. But for me, as singing, like in production, you have different layers. You have the drums, you have the percussions, you have the melodies, whatever, and then you have one layer that's the singing that for me ties everything together. But for me, it's just one layer, and I enjoy it. But I also enjoy that, like, the music making part for me, the actual writing of the music is something that's so natural to me. I never had, like, I have writer's block. I never have music. The music never stops coming out of me. So this is something I really enjoy doing.
Yeah, because as well, you know, like, I have noticed that Nadine Lebeki, the greatest Lebanese
producer. First of all, icon queen. Shout out to Nadine Lebeki. Yes. What an inspiration.
Yes,
genuinely.
Exactly. I mean, she is. She's very known specifically after her latest film, Kafir Nahum, right? But she follows you. And as well, Mohin Jaber follows you, which, by the way, he is the son of my dean at the university. And I know that he is very interested in all of, like, these things, specifically with his podcast and so on, right? So do you know them? Are you friends with them? Did they just, like, randomly, like, follow you? And how did you feel when they followed you?
Yeah, so Nadine specifically, I've been a fan for so long, like, especially what she does and the trailblazer she is as an Arab woman and the way she's, like, really taken the baton internationally. It's she's inspired me so much. I genuinely love her and her work and everything she's brought to the table, really, even to cinema in general, not just the films individually. She followed me when I released Sintel'eo in 2020, and I remember at that time, because the song went viral, I had a lot of people that I really like and respect follow me and find out, like, who I am from that. But her specifically, it was just like a moment of, like,
of course,
yes,
of course,
we're on the right track, because, you know, it's like, and it's not about how big someone is or how many followers they have, but just, like, someone that you really respect their presence in the world and what art they present, that just, like, means more, you know, like, and for example, I also got Drake's producer following me from that song, and I was like, those two were, like, really big highlights for me because I love their work so much. So it's just a kind of a nice, like, you know, you're doing the right thing, you're attracting the right people, you're in the right conversation, keep doing what you're doing. That's kind of what you know, what they brought into that when they followed me.
I can only imagine what that must be like, like,
course,
an icon in your field following you on Instagram.
Yeah.
But speaking of highlights, are there any kind of more personal or professional highlights to date that you've experienced?
Highlights of what?
So maybe, maybe, like, the first song that you shared went viral, or just, like, a personal moment, or being chosen for something, or performing to a crowd in Berlin and they're singing back your tunes, you know, that type of.
Yeah. You know, the past year has been really crazy. I mean, since I did Sintel'eo in 2020, when that came out, I decided to start my label, Mafi Budget, which means there's no budget. And starting to work with people that I'm, like, kind of, you know, aligned with from an artistic level, from people that operate from the same place. Starting the label and everything that came with that, honestly, I'm really so, so proud of that. I never thought, this was never really my inspiration from when I was young, like, I want to grow up and start a label, but this is where my journey has taken me. And in the past year, I feel like so much, I've been in the industry for 15 years, so I'm 31, I dropped out of school at 14, I studied music in London, and then I started working when I was, like, 15, 16. So it's really been a long road of, like, trying to figure out what I want to do and how I want to express myself, and also figuring out the music industry, which is very challenging, let alone in the region, in Lebanon. It's hard. So seeing all the achievements that we've done in the past year, all the releases, the accolades, it's more of, I see it, I look back and I'm like, there isn't, like, one thing that pops out. You know, different things have contributed to different things. Sintel'eo did something for my career that other songs didn't. Other songs brought different kind of fans or energy into my career. Being able to go on tour and seeing people sing the songs in Switzerland or in Berlin, this is, like, an honor to be, and to carry the flag with me, you know, the Lebanese flag, and to make other Lebanese artists feel like this is something that's possible. I don't have a reference to what I'm doing. There really isn't a reference that's an inspiration in a specific way. And what I'm trying to do in the hip hop culture or in the music that I'm presenting, it's it's been a big year, and I'm really proud of all of it, honestly. Even the downs, it's all about learning for me. Like, how can I make this better? How can I make this more me? How can I make this more authentic? So this is what I take out of it, not necessarily like the individual accolades, which I'm really, really grateful for. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, the fact that you just said you're Lebanese, and you know, like, I think this is a part of you that you will never, ever let go of. So how would you say that your music is contributing to the culture of Lebanon? Mm.
That's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know if it's a big statement for me to say that I think it's contributing to the culture in my way and in my perspective and to my community and the people that come to the shows. I get to hear how it contributes to their lives. But the way that I look at it is more like, okay, I'm creating a voice or a message, or I'm expressing myself in a certain way that I know hasn't been done in maybe in Arab culture, but more specifically in Lebanese, whether it's the dialect, the way that I say things in the lyrics, the things that I bring in, the things I talk about as an Arab woman, how unapologetic I am. Again, I don't think there has been too many examples for me to follow. So the intention of wanting to represent that and taking that really seriously for me, like when I'm in the studio and I'm creating and I'm thinking about what words I'm going to use, even specifically, I always go back to thinking like, okay, I have a song called Ikhir Hamme, for example, which means I don't care.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that in Lebanese. Like, there hasn't been a song. Like, maybe in English, there's been 20,000 songs that say that. But saying that in Lebanese hasn't been said. And I really want to make people feel what I would have liked to feel as a young person, which is represented, which is seen, which is heard. And that's what I see at the shows, and that's what I see in fans. It's not just like, okay, you have cool music. It's more like, we feel represented, and it's been hard for us to feel like that, especially growing up and being exposed to Western culture. And in the beginning, even I've had this conversation with a lot of people from my community. We were kind of raised up to, I think we all got into a tendency to want to, how can I put this in a proper way? To look at our art and the perspective of our art from a Western perspective, as opposed to really understanding the culture and where we come from and the references and how we can add to the conversation in a more genuine way and make that kind of impact. So this is really important to me. So to go back to your question, I hope that it adds to the culture. I just like to put my perspective out there in an authentic and uncensored way and hope that it can inspire people to do the same thing. That's really all I can ask for. I'm grateful that I get to do the fact that this is my job, that's still, you know, crazy to me. That's all I've ever wanted, was to get up every day and do this, you know.
So I feel like we're only at the tip of the iceberg in terms of this conversation. We don't have a lot of time left, but I would like to ask, you've started your label and you're working with artists, you're choosing with artists, you're collaborating. Would you maybe personally or for your label be able to or want to define a singular message or the purpose for your music?
A singular message?
Do you think it's important for artists to have a message? And if so, do you have something kind of in the back of your mind, this is what I'm trying to put out there?
I think it's important. I did this exercise for myself as an artist, and this is what I'd like to bring in when I'm collaborating with other artists or trying to develop them or producing them, which is to find really who they are authentically and how they want to translate that into art. I think that's really important. And that comes with a lot of questions. It's not even about just like, are you a good singer? Are you a good dancer? It's like, yeah, but how do you translate who you really are, your experiences and your view of the world to something that's authentic to you, to something that can relate to people who relate to you? You know, I work with artists that make different kinds of music or that want to speak to different audiences, but it's the same process. It's about really digging into their intention. The rest, for me, the technical stuff, it's all details. It's all exercises. It's like a sport. But getting into the intention, it's a much more difficult conversation than it sounds like. It took me years to really dig down and understand and ask the why. You know how they say, even in companies, you have to constantly ask the why. What is our purpose? What is our goal? So we can make decisions based off of that. So this is very important to me when I bring artists into the studio or when I'm talking to artists or collaborating, like what are we trying to say? Even if it's a fun thing, then the intention is fun, then how do we serve that purpose? Mm-hmm. So it's not about a singular message that applies to everyone. We don't have like a format, but it's more about the intention and how you maneuver around art that I really like to encourage artists to do when they're in this environment. I hope to bring that to their art.
So you said that you've been here for 15, you've been in the music industry for 15 years, yeah. Right? So a quick advice to people who would want to follow their passion.
People who would want to follow their passion?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's. I used to have a simpler answer to this question.
Yes.
And it's not simple and it's complicated. And you know how they say, I quit my 9-to-5 and now I work 24/7?
Yeah.
This is what it is. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of ups and downs. It's a lot of disappointments. It's a lot of freedom. But with freedom comes chaos. With freedom comes insecurity, financial instability. Like, it's the industry is a hostile environment. So you really, really, really have to feel like this is your only choice, like this is your calling. Otherwise, you know, do it as a side thing, do it as a hobby, because it's intense. But if you're able to get through it and you're able to really go all the way, there's it's unmatched. It's unmatched, really. Yeah.
We're at the very end of our interview, but I would like to give a quick shout out to Athara and their Regional Artist Spotlight Program for bringing us together and for being able to have this conversation. Like I said, I really do feel like it's the tip of the iceberg. How did it feel to be chosen as the artist, and what do you think the next year will bring for you?
Yeah, so big, big shout out for Artist Regional Spotlight. I'm really grateful to be here with them, and we've been in contact for a long time trying to make this happen, so I'm really excited to be involved with them in that capacity. They've done so many amazing features with other artists as well that I love their work. So shout out to them. I hope we can keep doing really amazing things together.
Amazing. Thank you so much, guys. That was Blue Pfeiffer waving the Lebanese flag around the world. Thank you so much for being
here.
We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for being here.
Guys, that is all we have time for in the Love in Dubai show. We'll see you tomorrow morning, same time, same place. Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me. We'll be right back.